I love problem solving.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of problems to solve with email newsletters. It's pretty clear what you need to do. Like, write one good ad, let it run, set up Upscribe. Mm-hmm. A little pop-up comes up from Web3 Daily and says, we also read these three and we get paid. That's a free subscriber for us.
Hey, I'm Anthony, and this is Indie Worldwide, the show where we travel the world talking to independent bootstrap startup founders and helping them build their independence. Today, I'm in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm talking to Chevy Cass, founder of Web3 Daily, a daily newsletter for anybody that's interested in crypto with over 25,000 daily readers. Let's go.
Like the in-person version of the mastermind that we've been informally running for... like the 3 months since I got to New York City.
Well, you and me.
You and me, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, I haven't been to one of these. Yeah, yeah.
No, I think you've been to every one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the very first thing I did when I got to New York is message you and say I'm in town, I think.
Even before you got to New York. We had our first phone call, and at the end of it, I got a notification in my calendar from like 3 months out being like, coffee with Anthony.
Yeah, you're right. So I guess I was in Guadalajara when I texted you, or when we first synced up, because we met through Seb.
Yeah.
And I met Seb through Indie Worldwide. And I knew that Seb was running a platform, a newsletter called Web3 Daily.
Yeah.
And I wanted to run a newsletter a lot like it, but for AI, so... Yeah. I hit him up, we had a call, he's like, you know, you really should talk to Chevy. And then I hit you up and you're like, I'm in New York. And I was like, oh, I'm going to New York.
It's kismet.
Yeah, it's kismet.
Yeah.
And so I put a calendar invite for like a month in advance. But then once I got here, you're like, hey, come to my co-working space.
Yeah.
And I've been up your ass this whole time.
It's been really good. It's been like, it's pushed me to kind of get my shit together with, I mean, I kind of put a lot of the problems we were facing on the back burner because there are like ways around it that are a little more expensive. And I was like, yeah. But then seeing you kind of kill it with your CPA, I was like, yeah, we should be doing that.
Yeah. So my newsletter now is Body Brain.
Yeah.
When I got to New York, I think it had about 1,000 subscribers. Your newsletter is Web3 Daily.
Yeah.
About cryptocurrency and Web3 and distributed technology.
Yeah.
Now I'm at 15,000 and I think you're at 25.
Yeah.
So catching up.
Yeah, fast too.
But the formats are very, very similar because we both publish daily newsletters.
Yeah.
The way we produce our newsletters is pretty different because it's you and Seb, and then I've got like a small team now of writers.
Yes. Yeah.
But the way we monetize is very similar.
And also
ads, the way we've grown, very similar.
The growth, both on the subscriber side and, revenue side. Has been similar in that you introduced me to passion fruit.
Yes.
Which is...
And you taught me how to do Facebook ads.
Yeah. And there's plenty of YouTube videos that can teach you how to do that.
Well, none of them can write the ad for you. And you wrote the only ad I've found so far that actually converts well.
That's the beauty of... That's what I really like about doing newsletters is... because previously I was in fashion retail.
Yeah.
So copywriting isn't as important. Like, the copy is the image.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell, convey way much more information.
Here's a shirt. You should buy it.
Yeah.
Do you like this shirt?
Do you like this? Does it align
with,
how you see yourself? Great. Click that button. Convincing someone to sign up to a newsletter it's all in the writing. So it's like, I really love copywriting. So it was like a really exciting opportunity to just do like really janky notes-based ads. And it's like one of the last bastions of like, proper Facebook level optimization because people sign up on the lead form that's built into Instagram, which means Instagram can track everything versus, with iOS 14, they were blocked from tracking any Apple device IDs, which meant you kind of, there was this black hole when people went onto a website. Did they add to cart? Did they purchase? You no longer really knew.
Yeah.
So it was all about staying on platform. And that's why you saw shopping. Instagram really pushed for people to start like buying stuff without leaving Instagram, like shopping on an Instagram page. Didn't really take off. With the lead forms, it's been there forever. People are quite used to it. It's 2 or 3 clicks, their email will autofill. So I remember being like, I heard someone talking about acquiring readers for $7 per subscriber. I was like, Jesus, is that what we have to look forward to? And I think they might have just hit so much scale that there's only...
What was this newsletter?
I think it was Sam Parr at The Hustle. I can't remember. Okay. I listened to a lot of podcasts, but I'm pretty sure it was him.
Because they were in the millions of subs, weren't they? Or did they not get that big?
Yeah, I think they sold at like 1.5 million subs.
That's a lot.
And now they're up around 2 to 3.
Because if my CPA, if the cost for me to get a new subscriber goes above $2, then I panic.
Yeah, I used to do the same, to be fair. I had this like cat and mouse game with Facebook because they don't like the keywords Web3 or crypto.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept having these issues where it would... there are a lot of like cleanliness practices that I could have stuck to better, mm-hmm. like responding to comments in the on your ads,
right.
which like for me, I was just like, people are just being like subscribed. And there's only so many times you can be like, cool, really, I should have been. But if you just post an ad, leave it there for ages, don't mm-hmm. really tweak it, Facebook's like, you know, they get wary about it.
Do they?
Because I did a lot of research into, like, why do my ads keep getting blocked? The main reason was because of the Web3 and crypto alignment, but mm-hmm. There's a lot of just basic stuff that was outside of...
They don't put that anywhere in, like, their guidance of, like, you should be commenting, replying to comments on your ads.
I don't think so. I mean, like that. I think, again, these are all trial and error kind of hearsay tests that people have done, but I think it harkens back to we want active accounts. They look at it's a bit scammy if you just kind of post something and leave it. I think a lot of because they align that with, let's say you're drop shipping and you're like, you don't have too many comments, or you do have like you because you blocked them all, or on the other side you go, all right, well, Facebook doesn't like when I block, so I'll let them go and I just will ignore them. People being like, I want my money back. Yeah, there's this thing of like, and I get it, like at a certain scale, which Facebook is what, 3 billion users across all of its platforms.
Yeah.
You have to generalize.
A lot of those comments are pretty unhinged.
Yeah.
I've noticed. Oh. Like on Facebook.
Like, oh, on Facebook or Instagram?
On Facebook.
Yeah.
In particular, like people responding to the ads they'll just talk about any old thing.
It's nuts. It's sometimes a very
completely unrelated. They just,
yeah.
They're kind of crazy. And I guess that's got to be a cohort of the readers as well, like people that interact with Facebook ads.
Yeah, I noticed we were getting a lot of older readers from Facebook.
Yeah.
Which we welcome, like, initially when we started, it's like, clean slate. Mm-hmm. You can kind of make assumptions being like, I think our tone will align with people like 25 to 34.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't really care as long as people are enjoying the content. So we just cast a really wide net, and strangely enough, it was more so like 30 to 55 where we...
Yeah,
it was broad.
On Facebook too. I think that's just like because that's who's active on Facebook nowadays.
I mean, sorry, when I say...
You mean like
across Instagram, or you know, whatever placement you're doing.
I mean, even Instagram though is starting to skew older.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting landscape now as far as like... Because pre-2020, it was just like, who is going to come along and knock Facebook off their perch?
Yeah.
And it's not like TikTok did, but it's like the first time I was like, oh, this is a real alternative. You could build, quite easily build a business on TikTok. Whereas like Snapchat was always good for like supplementary stuff. Like, yeah, it's a higher cost per acquisition, but cool. People still buy t-shirts or whatever on Snapchat. If you were to take Facebook away and it was just Snapchat, you'd have to get, you know, pretty creative or be selling to a very young crowd.
Yeah.
Versus now it's kind of like you got YouTube Shorts, TikTok,
Instagram,
Snapchat, Reddit has, I'm talking about like vertical scrolling video. Yeah. All, you know, like you don't click it, we'll just figure it out for you.
Format.
Yeah. I heard something, I think I was listening to Mr. Beast being interviewed, and he was like, it's the first time ever where you can have one format and it'll work across everything. So if you're a short form video creator in that vertical video creator, you can literally just build for one audience.
You were TikToking for a while, but you stopped.
Yeah, I hate TikTok. I mean, I don't hate it, but it was like, it just burnt me out. It was like, this is really cool. And I'm sure the algorithm's changed since then, but we accrued like, I think 15,000 subscribe followers mm-hmm. across...
this was for the e-com.
3 months. This was for educational stuff that we were doing beforehand. And it was just one of those things where it was like we're in between because we would produce these like courses with people that, you know, we did one with a fashion influencer that was such a good course. It was like just a poorly aligned. He walked you through how to like essentially build a brand and get brand deals mm-hmm. as a public figure. But his audience follow him for fashion tips, not how to become an influencer. Yeah. But yeah, as we were building that, there was a lot of like this weird cadence where it was like, okay, well, we can't run marketing for something it isn't produced yet. So in the meantime, I was like, all right, well, I'll just start our TikTok account and see how many followers we can get. Because then when we're ready to launch, we have a pipeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we did some advertising on there too. The scary thing about TikTok was it was post iOS 14. So you can't track mm-hmm. anyone's behavior on websites. Every click was tracked on TikTok. I don't know how they got around Ooh. Apple's without, you know, getting booted from there. Yeah. And it might have changed since then. But I remember being like, I was looking at the ads to cart and like mm-hmm. Our customer journey on Google Analytics and on our website, and then verifying them against it on TikTok and being like, it's picking up 98% of them. Like it was just a little bit off. Whereas Facebook and Instagram was just like...
Are they keeping you inside of like the TikTok mobile browser? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, but I mean, so does Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you can't use that as a
workaround. Gotcha. So they must have been doing something there. Do you know if that's still the case?
I'm not sure. They might have just... There was this weird like API connection that you could do. At that point, I knew even less about APIs than I do now.
Yeah.
But it was just like, you know, just paste this code here and just shut up and let us do it.
Yeah.
Shopify had a bunch of apps that would allow you to do it. I found, you know, the attribution was still off. And like, at a certain point, you just need to like, I don't care if it's exact.
Mm-hmm.
It can be wrong. It just needs to be consistently wrong. And TikTok was a little wrong, but it was consistently wrong. Whereas Instagram didn't know what it was doing. Mm. Yeah.
But TikTok didn't have much of anything to do with Web3 Daily.
Oh, nothing. Right? No, that's an old account. We still haven't used it. I mean, I was doing mostly like marketing stuff on there, as in like, here's how to write good copy. Here's, you know. So we probably could transition it into like blockchain and crypto, but one, it's probably more efficient just to pay for someone to go to our landing page, make money back on Upscribe.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a treadmill. It's a hamster wheel.
Mm-hmm. A flywheel, maybe.
No, as in like...
The treadmill of creating content for TikTok.
Yeah. I've been reflecting on it a lot, where it was just like, it'd be great if that amount of effort, because it was quite low effort, mm-hmm. it was just a grind every day, but you could pump out 2 to 3 pieces of content. If you had the idea, you talk to camera for 30 seconds and you're done. Like, I'd script it. I have terrible memory, but I could, like, fumble through it. The parasocial relationship that it creates isn't as strong as, you know, YouTube or podcasts are, like, the holy grail. And, I mean, I've heard people say email, too. I think podcasts is just way more intimate. The weird thing I heard recently was Tim Ferriss said if you had to give up everything and keep one channel...
Mm-hmm.
He'd keep his email list.
Yeah, for sure.
Over his podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to put, like, a call to action in a podcast, I think, you know?
That's true.
Like, an email is a really direct way to actually sell something to your audience.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will kind of go back through your emails if they're really good.
I just don't like reading, which is ironic because I write.
For somebody that writes. I think it's probably because... you're writing every single day that you're not as interested in reading.
I mean, even before that,
you've stepped that part of your brain already.
Like, I mean, and it's why we kind of go to the nth degree to try and have a really distinct tone and be like casual and make as many jokes as possible. Like, I only ever liked ones that were kind of like, here's entertainment and you're going to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
If it's like a how-to or like a kind of technical breakdown or something, I want to go to YouTube.
Right.
So I can hit 2x speed They can run me through it. They can be visuals at the same time. But I, that's just me. But I think I keep coming back to this thing of like, let's not try and create something that we think people want. Let's just create something that we want and find people that align with us.
I think that's a big part of why like these daily newsletters work in the first place. It's because most of what's in your inbox is pretty dry.
Yeah.
So if you get one thing that's actually fun to read, then you'll open it.
Yeah.
You'll probably prioritize it over maybe even the email from your boss that's going to put a new task on your plate.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to dial up the parasocial relationship a bit more. Well, not even parasocial. I would like a community where we get to interact. I mean, podcasts are very one-sided. But it's more so a thing of like, okay, there's a lot of things you want to do. You can do anything, just not everything, is the thing that I keep reminding myself.
I keep trying to do everything.
Yeah.
I really want to do everything.
Yeah. It's a tough one to get around because it's like, if you find something you're excited about.
Yeah.
And there's all these different facets to it that you could explore and could be really valuable. It's, I mean, we're at the point where we're like, let's keep the team small. Let's just like bootstrap and grow. So I keep going like, yep, when we have team members, we can, or like.
Well, you could probably start getting team members now.
I mean, we already have team members, but as in like, let's just find someone that's just doing podcasts or just doing writing and we'll do the podcast or, yeah, all these little, I just want to be able to follow my curiosity and for it to be, the discussion that we were having was like, if we're just going to do cool shit for the point of doing cool shit, we just have to talk about it, you know, turn it into content. So that's the excuse we're finding now, like the ChatGPT bot that we created, which, again, it's one of those things where it's like they're a dime a dozen now and they're so easy to make, having made one. But when it just kind of first came out and what's the...
ChatGPT was like early Hugging this face? Year. Hugging Face?
Hugging Face?
Yeah.
Like, I learned about that in a day from a YouTube tutorial.
Oh, yeah.
Copied their code. Ask ChatGPT to alter it to, you know, fulfill certain parameters.
Yeah, Hugging Face is a community of, like, AI developers.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mix of Jupyter Notebooks with, like, Reddit somehow, which is all about AI.
And there's a social aspect to it too, right? Because you can post it publicly or you can make it private. I found it really fascinating. And because I don't know what I'm doing it, instead of taking, like, 20 minutes, it took me 3 weekends to get my head around it. So... there's a long way of saying like just those time sinks that exist. It's like having a newsletter makes you go, okay, well, as long as I talk about it and like our audience goes, I don't know why you did that, but that's cool. Like, I'm glad you did it.
I feel like that's the value of things like a YouTube channel and a personal newsletter as well. It's because you can like make anything that you're doing pay back over time.
Yeah.
Because it will help you build this audience around this sort of behavior. So I've been... this week I kind of reinvested into my personal newsletter. I took their Indie Worldwide list and I copied it over to my personal to kind of separate, because before I was kind of using Indie Worldwide for both.
How many newsletters are you running?
Three now, I guess. So the...
You need to calm down.
The Indie Worldwide list is the one I've had for the longest time. It's about like 4,000-ish readers now. And it's been a mix of like, hey, here's what I'm working on. Here's what's going on in the community.
Yeah.
But, since doing Bodied Brain, I've learned a lot about growing a niche newsletter. And I want to apply that to Indie Worldwide. And I don't think the personal stuff fits anymore. And there's also experiments I want to try that don't really fit. So I forked it. Just kind of copied over the subscribers from Indie Worldwide. Said, like, hey, here's what I'm doing. If you don't want to read it, like, click here, opt out. But everybody seemed really excited, actually, to get more of that, like, behind-the-scenes kind of stuff. And I want to use that as my, like, experimental space of, like, I'm just going to try some random shit. So I came here yesterday for the screen test, right? Yeah. To, like, test out my new equipment for the first time. And, test. But I made you, like, wait for 20 minutes while I bought a domain. HowWillIDie.com. Just one W, but shared between how and will. And then right after, I went and built HowWillIDie.com.
Okay, this is the context is helping me understand. Because when you walked in today, I was like, what's the...
I was cool. Walking over, like, I was, like, thinking about projects I could do that are, like, data-centric.
Yeah.
And then my mind went to like actuarial tables. So the statistics that tell you your likelihood of dying from, based on like your age and your lifestyle and things like that. It's like what insurance uses to write you a life insurance policy.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, that's interesting. I wonder if anybody owns howwillidie.com, because if they don't, I'm going to buy it. And the one that's spelled correctly, somebody is squatting, but the one that is missing a W was free, so I bought that one. And then I was going to build a...
Have you looked for howwillidie.com?
No, I got to check that one next, before I release this podcast.
Yeah.
So nobody snipes me. Yeah, but the original idea was like build like a viral quiz kind of thing that people can put their information in to, and it'll tell them how they're most likely to die and then give some cool statistics. Maybe something that would work well on like our data is beautiful on Reddit or internet is beautiful or something like that.
Yeah. Write some beautiful copy for it.
Yeah, but I only had 1 hour, so I made a joke website instead, yeah, or at least for now.
I'm going to die from caring too much.
Yeah, I think I'm dying for spare parts. All it does is pick a random cause of death every time you refresh the page.
How many options are there?
There's 100, but my little sister was very excited about the idea and is going to send me maybe 100 more.
Cool. See, I like that. I mean, I like it just... I was interested in it when you said it yesterday, and then today when we were talking about it, I was like, yeah, what is the direction? The context helps.
There is no direction, but, you know...
No, but, those sort of things are super shareable. Like, yeah. even now, where it's like, what is it, like a form on Facebook? No, it's just like a standalone website.
I want to be able to just, like, have ideas, make them quickly, and, like, launch them.
Yeah.
And then maybe follow through later if there's actually interest.
Those publications where you know the person and you know they go to... cool stuff like robot YouTube or like maker YouTube. Simone Yetch, who's the kid with the glasses that makes like
insane Michael robots. Reeves.
Yeah, Michael Reeves. Like I feel the same way about when I watch their stuff. It's like I don't want to make any of this. I just like watching you.
Yeah, just fun to watch them tinker.
Yeah, let your freak flag fly and doing like highly technical stuff that is just juxtaposed against like the stupidity of it all is like, I don't know, it hooks me. And I think that sort of stuff is...
Yeah, so I want to do more like that, but I was like, oh, I need a space for it. So personal newsletter, I'll probably also start uploading to like my personal YouTube or something as well. Would be cool. Just have some space for random wild shit that all it does is kind of feed people back into the like Anthony brand. And then if I... you know, actually accidentally stumble on a good idea every now and then I have a platform to promote it.
So at what point do you get spread too thin? And second...
Oh, right away, before I even start.
Yeah.
I'm already spread too thin.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to find ways to get more time and energy.
So finding more time and energy for what? Because like the other thing, this is something I've been battling with because I'm a tinkerer.
Yeah.
So I was like... I used to build and scale e-com sites, but my whole thing was I just wanted to buy my time back and to be geographically free.
Yeah. Which I love. Australian in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. but I mean, even this is, I guess, starting in 2016. Yeah. So it was a while. And, you know, before the iOS 14, it was like once you had your systems in place and you knew what to do, you could spin something up in a day, test a product. If it didn't sell, you close it down. If it sold, you're good. So I had like a warehouse in China that I'd just be like, can you buy me 10 of each of these? And if I could sell them out within, you know, 7 days, then I was like, all right, you could scale here. But I never looked for ideas where I was like, this is going to be a long-term business. It'd be like virtual assistant just to do all the customer service. I'd scale up the ads, automate the ads the way I showed you with like the if over the past 7 days it's, you know, below this profit margin, lower the budget. If it's above this, push it up. But I was hitting this point where it was just like, yeah, I just keep like building, scaling to a point and then being like, yeah, I don't want to do anything with it. Just like let it essentially fizzle out until people don't care about the product anymore.
Yeah.
And I'll find another one to do. And then having that thing of like, I should find something that I really give a shit about, that I'm excited, like, because at this point I was like, I have the freedom to do what I want. What do I want to put my time into?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You still don't know?
At that point I didn't.
Right.
And now I know it's Web3 Daily, but at that point it was...
How long ago did you start Web3 Daily?
It was February of 2022.
Okay.
Yeah. We launched in publicly in March, but we started writing just in a Google Word document.
Mm-hmm.
And each day we'd update it and then, you know, comment and be like, we should do this tone, don't say this. Figured out a format. I mean, the format's changed completely, but at that time it was like 3 small paragraphs on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not even paragraphs. It was like, again...
So February 2022, did you have like some kind of launch to get it out there? How did you get like your first 100 readers?
Facebook ads.
Yeah. The first 1,000.
Facebook ads.
The first 10,000.
Facebook ads. I mean, like, at a certain point, referral programs came in there, but I looked at it the other day, and like from reader referrals,
that makes sense because you already knew how to do Facebook ads coming in because you've been doing them. You're like, this is a growth journal that works, and I know how to work it.
And there's a lot of stuff, like one off stuff that you can try out. Like, I spoke to someone who used to work at Morning Brew, and they're like, yeah, we tried out a bunch of different giveaway formats.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, maybe it was just because we were like so focused on college kids initially, but
you
could do pretty much anything and it would kind of work, but like the golden thing was MacBooks. Mm-hmm. If you said like, invite a friend, enter a raffle, all you need to do is invite one friend. The more friends you invite though, the more raffle tickets you get.
Yeah.
That did a lot of stuff. So we tried that sort of stuff out. We gave away $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. And it's like, it worked, but not like, I was like, if this works well enough, I would happily just like literally make it a running thing. Once every month, on the first Monday of every month, everyone knows that $1,000 worth of Bitcoin goes up. So invite your friends.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a MacBook goes up for grabs. We tried AirPods. But yeah, at the end of it, it was just like, everything's so cheap on Facebook. It's like, you may as well
just give the money to Facebook.
Yeah.
I feel like it comes down to alignment too on those giveaways. Like, are people there? People are there to get the free thing, not to read your newsletter. So there's no incentive to stick around once the raffle drawing is done.
Yeah, exactly.
So there has to be some kind of alignment where, like, if you're giving away crypto and it's a crypto newsletter, there's a little bit of a relationship there, but it'd be better if it was like, oh, we're going to give away free access to the community, and that was very enticing.
Yeah.
Then you know that's like a really motivated reader.
Yeah. Yeah, talking to you about like your best channels as far as engagement is something that I would like, because ConvertKit doesn't give you, like, it won't be like, this person came from, or this cohort of people came from Facebook and they open at this rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not an option. But I was saying this to Seb the other day. I love problem solving.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of problems to solve with email newsletters. It's like, in a really good way, in that it's like, it's pretty clear what you need to do. Like, write one good ad, put it on Facebook, let it run, set up Upscribe through Spark Loop, so you're offsetting. So for every person that clicks on your ad on Facebook, they put their email in on your website, mm-hmm. a little pop-up comes up from Web3 Daily and says, we also read these three, and we get paid for referring any that they also click.
Yeah.
So let's say it's $2 per subscription that we send someone else's way. If they just click one, they're pretty much, that's a free subscriber for us.
Yeah.
Like, that's not hard to discover. You know, it's pretty well known. I remember
it feels like a cheat code.
It feels like a cheat code. It only really became a thing in January of this year, of 2023.
Yeah.
And at that point, like, I remember having this like realization, being like, I'm so fucking smart. I was like, that's the whole point. That's why they're doing it.
Business exists. Yeah. Yeah. It's a smart business.
But okay, the weird thing was with Spark Loop, they didn't pitch it as that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, yeah, it's a way you can monetize.
I don't think they realized it was going to be such a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't think they, I think now it's really obvious that, okay, if it costs me $3,000 in ads and I immediately make $3,000 back from Sparkloop, okay, let me just put as much money as I can find into ads, because I'm going to get it all right back. Yeah. Plus, you know, 1,500 to 3,000 subscribers.
Yeah, I think it was, like, when I read it, and again, I could be, like, way off, but my understanding of it was, like, well, you've been putting ads for other people's newsletters in your newsletter.
Yeah.
How about you just, like, put it at a different point in the subscriber journey, like, when they sign up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Just put this code in. Yeah, and I just did the back of the napkin math, and I was, like, over the first month, I was, like, shit, we made money this month from what used to be a cost center is now a profit center. It wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
But it was just like, okay, that's huge. And
making any amount of money, it's crazy.
Yeah.
From running it from, you know, because you're not selling anything. You're just getting that for free as a referral fees.
And so, like, the growth is really well established as far as, like, what to do.
Yeah.
I think the black box that everyone's trying to open now is sponsorships. Yeah. My advice would be you get to just pour as much money, you know, like, let's say you have $3,000 worth of budget and you can acquire around 1,000 to 2,000 readers with that money. You then hit that point, you set up on, I would, if I was starting from scratch, as much as, like, there's features that I'm like, this is really annoying me, Beehive, because then you can get on their ad network at 2,000. You can sign up with sales.co.
Yeah, sales.co.
They'll take a 30% cut, but they'll do all the outreach for you. Essentially, they'll just be like, oh, by the way, you need to put this ad here at this time. Sponsorships.com will do the same thing with even less work. They'll just be like, hey, there's someone with $100,000 worth of budget. You sell for like $1,000. We're splitting it across all of our newsletter network. That is like the other piece of the pie of like getting the money coming back in. That's all to say it's like, there's a very clear path and it's not a whole lot of problem solving once you've got that down.
Yeah.
And problem solving is really exciting.
I think because it's so straightforward and the knowledge is disseminated, like, we're seeing a huge explosion of newsletters.
Yeah.
So many people are launching newsletters and kind of following this playbook that was spearheaded by, like, Morning Brew and then The Hustle and then The Milk Road.
Yeah.
And now, like, everyone's realized, like, oh, shit, this is a really straightforward business model. Cost me $2 to get a reader. I make $2 back in the first month. Marketing budget is zero. I can make maybe $1 a month from this reader. As long as they stick around for a month, I've made money.
Yeah, and you can also, like, there's even more dots to connect now, being like, okay, that's cool, so you can make money from it, but what's it worth as a business? Like, can you exit from this? It's like, you know, coming from e-com, it's like, you can, but it's like, it's one times revenue will be like, which will be like 3 to 5 times profit.
Yeah.
So you can grind it out and kind of like take a, you know, 1 year's worth of paycheck and then leave. The difference with newsletters is like the data you can start correlating is Morning Brew sold for 70 million, 75. They sold a majority share in their business for that. To Business Insider, I believe. Blockworks, a crypto newsletter and news site, just raised at a $100 million valuation.
Dang.
With, I think, 250,000 subs. So,
it's crazy. Like, it's one of the few audiences you can really sell. Like, emails are kind of a commodity. You can really, you can combine lists pretty easily. Like, I feel like people are pretty receptive to being like, hey, Bodied Brain and some competing AI newsletter are now one entity, and like, we were kind of similar before and now we're exactly the same.
Yeah.
And like, everybody's probably going to still open those emails.
Yeah.
Where they can't do that really with a YouTube channel. Like, somebody's face is on that channel and it's really hard to like introduce new personalities.
Yeah. And you kind of like, there's way less platform risk.
Yeah.
You know, with email, there is like, you got to keep in good graces with ISPs, but
you're not playing cat and mouse games with algorithms so much. You're just trying to keep like a healthy list, make sure that people who don't want your email don't get it, and like write good content. And that's kind of it. It's got to be one of the most straightforward online businesses that exist.
And you're kind of protected through, you know, like email is the original online decentralized platform.
Yeah.
If you mess around on YouTube and you get booted, okay, that's on you. But on the flip side, YouTube could just be like, we're updating our terms and conditions, and for what, like some nebulous reason,
yeah,
that affects you, and your, you know, your earnings are cut in half overnight. Gmail, also owned by Google, surprise, they can't pull that shit, because it's like, if they do something that pushes the needle too far, like, you know, in favor of them and not the user, then the user will be like, cool, I'll go to Outlook, I'll go to any of your competitors that are all on the same network, and I can take my domain, I can take, you know, mm-hmm. web3daily.co and plug it into another one. That threat of, well, not threat, but like the decentralization keeps a higher level of honesty and like a lower level of fuckery as far as that's concerned. So if you build a list the same way you would build a subscriber base on YouTube, one's way more protected.
Like, podcasting is probably the only equivalent where it's also distributed own network, but much poorer data, much harder to convert like attention into action, and much harder to sell, because again, it's like a particular voice that somebody gets used to. And to grow a podcast, you end up just growing an email newsletter anyway.
The I've never heard someone go like, I listen to a lot of podcasts that will kind of give you the peek behind the curtain. I've never heard someone be like, yeah, this is how to grow a podcast. It's just like, yeah, we just kind of throw a bunch of shit at the wall.
It's really, like, really hard. The only way I've seen people blow up is if they're already friends with a bunch of podcasters and go on all of their podcasts and then they get referred, or if they're already famous and they're like, hey, million YouTube subscribers, I now have a podcast, and they'll instantly have, you know, or their 10% most dedicated fans listening to them.
They have a newsletter. They're like, hey, do you want this in audio form?
Yeah, right. And they might just write their full newsletter, and then they might record a podcast, turn that into a newsletter, and then include the link to listen to it in the newsletter. That's maybe the only really repeatable strategy. It's either you got to build some big presence on some social media, or you do the newsletter strategy, and then you could also have a podcast. So that's part of what I'm doing with the Indie Worldwide now, is I'm going to focus on growing the list and then use the mailing list to promote the podcast more.
Yeah.
More directly. I would put episodes in there before, but I kind of fell off the podcast wagon a little bit. I'm trying to get back on it.
Yeah, it's a big undertaking.
The main reason I do it is because I get to meet cool people. You know, it's such an easy excuse to talk to people. It doesn't really matter if anybody at all listens, because people are down to chat who might not have been down otherwise.
Yeah.
And so a large percent of the paying members of Indie Worldwide, and like the people who've advertised on Indie Worldwide, and even the people who've advertised with Bodied Brain, have come through the podcast. Even though it doesn't get a ton of listeners, or at least that it hasn't, this one's going to blow up.
Yeah, that's actually something I've really learned from you, as far as, like, I know having that sort of reach is good.
Yeah.
Through, like, I remember you being like, yeah, I built a Twitter following, and it's like, I followed this pattern, and here's, you know, you showed me a graph. Mm-hmm. It's like, here's where I changed, you know, I started doing, like, it was just like a change in your schedule. You know, like, I just decided to be consistent here. It was kind of like,
I think that was our very first call, because you just like brain dumped everything you knew about newsletters, and I was like, that was very valuable, and now I feel kind of indebted to like give that back somehow. And the only thing I really knew very well was Twitter growth, because I had grown my Twitter account to about the same size, I guess, like 15,000 followers. So I just gave you everything I knew about that.
See, I was like, I'm always hesitant around that sort of thing, because I had that thing in the back of my head where I was like, yeah, we grew to 20,000 followers on TikTok, and it was like, you know, getting anyone to convert was like, I mean, probably really good for a newsletter because it's much lower lift, but as far as like getting them to buy something, and for context, we were selling like $250 products, so it's still even with running ads, it's a lot. But it was like, I remember being like, okay, that makes sense, but like, let's check out the clicks to site. It's like next to nothing. And again, I'm like, there's a way around it. There's a way to like optimize that. I am wary, though, of going into those things being like, you could build this whole thing, and then you got to, like, then you got to figure out how to optimize. Is that where you're best putting your focus? Again, because I like to tinker and, like,
grind, and you can never really step away from any of the social media. Like, unless you start from the very beginning with a format that you're not really a part of, you know? Yeah. Like, the YouTube channels making the most money are the ones where you never see a creator's face.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the very peak ones actually do have creators, like Mr. Beast is obviously in a lot of his videos, but there's all these channels that are, like, kind of in the infotainment genre or whatever.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, video essays, and they've got somebody doing VO, and it's, like, stock footage.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily build that parasocial relationship, which is maybe hurts engagement and growth at the beginning, but it also lets you, you know, create a team, and you don't have to have, like, one passionate creator be on their game 24/7. Like, this is basically what BuzzFeed was doing, like, 5-10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Where they had all these YouTube channels that were, like, highly produced, like, very formulaic, and...
BuzzFeed Unsolved, that then became its... They bought the rights to it.
Or, like...
Yeah.
Then, like, in the middle, there's, like, creators doing formats, so you got, like, Try Guys, which also came out, like, BuzzFeed, right? Where it's, like, okay, these are faces.
BuzzFeed, too.
Yeah, like, a lot of...
I know Unsolved. I watched a thing about how the Unsolved presenters then bought the rights to the name, and they do the Unsolved channel now.
I think Try Guys did something similar, or they just, like... I think the other thing is they just leave BuzzFeed, and then because they've become a face, they can take their audience with them.
Yeah.
Which is part of why I think the model ended up kind of crumbling a little bit, because they'd have to you have to make those creators partners because of the parasocial relationship that gets formed. Like, they kind of hold... It's like Taylor Swift re-recording her masters, you know? Because people follow the creator, the face, if there is one.
And she's, like, she was really smart in that she wasn't... Well, like, Taylor's version sounds like Taylor's original version.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you're really just being like, do you want to help me out? How about you listen to the exact same song as far as you can tell? Like, super fans will be like, oh, yeah, that the intonation there might be different, but it's like, and you're helping me out a ton. Fascinating. I love that. I listened to the Acquired breakdown on it. I was like, I had no idea. I thought she just recorded a few singles, but she's done entire re-recordings of albums.
Yeah.
The undertaking would be massive. I mean, it'd be like, you would be a step ahead because you have something to reference, be like, I know exactly where I need to get to.
Oh, well, you're a music producer, so you understand.
It's wild. I'm going to argue against myself here and say, like, we are now in a point in time, because you can kind of cut and paste all of your content across all of these platforms.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to create an email and podcast, you can kind of go, all right, well, email, I can then reconstitute any of the written content into, I mean, I guess it's just Twitter. You could do Reddit, but as far as, like, written platforms... Cool. Low lift there. Then as far as podcasting goes, if you just do a video podcast, you get your systems in place. So you're like, I know what I need to be able to put this into vertical. I know what cameras are required. This isn't going to look janky if I zoom in and trim.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of just, we're already seeing it, but, take all of those clips and put them across so many different platforms that it is like the growth engine alone is...
I call it, like, in my head, this is the Gary Vee strategy, where you, like, make a piece of content and then it's like you got to reuse it in a bajillion places. I feel like it's oversold a little bit because, yes, you can do that, but if the content isn't itself really good, it's not worth it.
So I think Gary went for, like, volume. Because if you look...
But he also found a format that people really engaged with. Where he's like, I'm going to be this bombastic, fast talker who, like, calls people out on their shit and, like, shows how easy it is to, like, make an extra $100. And he just kept doing that over and over again. He found a format he could repeat, and he knew that he wouldn't get engagement. But if you're...
I'm talking more about, like, regardless of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, like, create really one single piece of, like, really good content. If it's written, email. If it's spoken, video, podcast.
Well, that's the thing. Start with a really good piece of content.
See,
mediocre content. Like, this technique of splitting stuff up won't save mediocre content. It'll enhance really good content.
Yeah.
And as in, help it take off.
You take those like sugary 60-second bits and you put them onto Reels.
Yeah.
The algorithm and those discovery engines are like, you don't need to follow any, that's something that didn't exist until TikTok came along, and it's really powerful. And because it's so powerful, everyone's copied it. Mm-hmm. So you can get those viewers and those subscribers and those eyeballs way easier than used to be. The Gary V approach, I would say like, don't like it, or at least like optimize it. Because I remember looking and being like, shit, he's got like 4 million subs and he's doing like, maybe he was in a lull or something, but it was like 40,000 views, 60,000. It was like rare to see him crack 100,000 views.
Yeah.
So I was like,
yeah, it was just,
it's just this volume thing. And with Gary, it's like, he's so fucking distractible. As far as like, if there's one conversation happening, he'll just be like all over the place, where it's like, you can look at him and be like, you obviously know what you're doing, but you're not great at communicating just because you're like grabbed by every idea, you know. Mm-hmm. He's that high energy guy. You take someone like Tim Ferriss, mm-hmm. and you can find those like golden nuggets of like insight in those conversations really frequently.
Yeah.
But Tim doesn't do video. And it's like, I think he's kind of like, I actually listened to him recently. He was like, yeah, I don't want to because I'm very happy with my level of fame. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would like to turn it down a little bit. So as far as like growing, I don't need that. I would prefer to have like a small, highly engaged, highly trusted audience than a large one.
Yeah.
Where, and even if they were trusted, then like my visibility is like, I would prefer to turn it down if otherwise.
There's definitely a sweet spot where like you get access to things. You can talk to who you want to talk to, but you're not being like bothered all the time.
Yeah.
Out and about. You know, like my audience is teeny tiny. 15,000-ish readers, and you've seen it. Yeah. I get people stop me on the street sometimes with like
just, Washington Square Park that time.
Yeah, just walking around. That was it's happened very cool. A few times now where like somebody will know me just from Twitter and like say hi. And that's really cool because it only happens very rarely, like maybe once a month.
Yeah.
But if it was an everyday thing, I think it would get real old real fast.
Yes. Yeah, I can imagine it to be... I have that thing of, like, I've imagined, like, I wonder what I would do if I saw someone that I knew from a podcast.
I've seen people I recognize from, like, YouTube and stuff, and I've left them alone.
Yeah, I'm like, I think I don't know if I could just do the, like... I mean, I could.
I think the more like, hey, famous they are, the less likely I would be to actually go up and say hi because they know they're getting mobbed.
I mean, the podcasts I listen to, they would get recognized a lot, but it wouldn't be like, you know, they need personal security or anything. It'd be small time. But my thing is like, my instant thing would to be like, you know, talk about something that I just listened to them say. It's like, that would be such a strange experience for them to be like, you know about me and my life.
Yeah.
You know, it's a parasocial relationship. Do I want to be that person that's like throwing that at them? Because, and that could really ruin, you know, don't meet your hero sort of thing. That could freak them out. And then that could sour my experience of listening to them being like...
I think they get somewhat used to it.
Oh, they absolutely would. But again,
like if you come up to somebody and you act like you know them, most people will like be cautious enough about being rude to kind of go with it for at least a little bit to try to figure out if they forgot you. Or at least that's what I do, because I have a hard time remembering who I've met or not. So, like, when that guy came up to us in the park for a little bit, I wasn't sure that we hadn't already met.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it seems like he knows me. I probably know him, too. And also, this has happened rarely enough that, like, that is not my first assumption, is that, you know, I'm famous. And people know me. Like, no.
Well, I mean, you travel a lot. You meet a lot of people. So, it's like, there is a really good chance of, at a certain point of scale, if you don't move around too much, you're going to know that, like, they just know me from YouTube or, you know, me being in the area is 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with, like, I travel in, like, these nomad circles a lot where people are all over the place. It's not crazy for me to run into somebody in a different country than I met them in.
And that's, like, I mean, I think about my relationship with podcasters that I'll listen to where it's, like, again, there's a huge amount of trust built up, and if they recommend a product, not if they advertise, weirdly enough, like, I don't think I've ever bought an ad from a podcast, but if they mention it being like, you know, I'm working on this, let's see how it goes, like a little case study, it's like, I want to try that out. Or if it's a tool that they mention that's like, yeah, I prefer this over this, I have such a high propensity to go out and be like, perfect, that's...
Yeah, I feel like these parasocial networks are better monetized through products you own a piece of, at least, or like something you've built yourself versus ads.
I mean, we're already seeing it with YouTubers, where it's like Cars and Bids from Doug DeMuro. You've got, I mean...
We got Feastables, Mr. Beast.
Feastables, Mr. Beast. Two-Turnt Tony has his Two-Turnt Tea. That's so annoying to say.
I think Graham Steven had, like, coffee.
He, although I think that one might have weirdly failed. Enough, is, like, sure. I think one of, like, he's, like, the finance guy.
Yeah.
He's one of the worst examples of, like, productizing. That was, like, it was a cool thing, and he was, like, I just kind of want to do it to see if I can do it, and I'm not going to try and make money on it.
Yeah.
And it seems like he didn't. He kept it down really low because his whole shtick is, like, don't spend silly money. Don't buy coffee at Starbucks, make it at home. So he's like, he kind of has to stick to like creating quality but affordable coffee. But as far as like giving personal recommendations through products they've created, I remember being like, oh yeah, shit, he hasn't done that. He doesn't need to. But at the same time, like that whole thing of like, who will the first billionaire YouTuber be? It's like, yeah, it won't be from AdSense, and it won't be from taking that money you make through AdSense and investing it. You can make some really good money doing that, but it's like, no, if you want a $1 billion exit, you're gonna have to create Feastables or oh my god, what's Logan Paul's thing?
Prime Energy.
Yeah, they could. Okay, who do you think is gonna get the billion first, Mr. Beast or Logan Paul?
Mr. Beast is arguably already worth multiple billions, I would say.
$1 billion exit.
Because he said somebody wanted to buy...
Someone tried to buy him for a billion,
and he said, that's too low.
Which he's right.
Yeah.
Like, he is... If you add up all of the major networks' primetime slots...
Yeah.
He gets more than that in the first few days of a video.
Yeah. I don't know, you going for the $1 billion exit? Like, I feel like we're playing a different game than that.
I don't know.
Like, the rate of growth of our newsletters is not on a trajectory.
Oh, no, I'm talking about, I thought you were saying, like, you don't think...
Like, in general?
Mr. Beast is going to try and exit for a
billion. No, like, you and me personally, what are we going for?
So going back to the whole... You know, we've seen these valuations and these exits. It's like, okay, well, if you can build, let's say we build Web3 Daily to 3 million readers, we know that there's been a $100 million valuation with a quarter of a million at Blockworks. Okay, let's just say that we are not nearly as valuable as Blockworks, but we have 3 million daily readers. We target people that are kind of like, this is all very confusing. I just want it in simple language, which means we actually, like most of our readers are actually like, quite technical, but we also attract people that are like, I don't understand this and I want to.
Yeah.
So I, like in my mind, it's like, okay, well, if Blockworks can get it at a $100 million valuation at a quarter of a million readers, if we get 3 million, let's say we get that same $100 million valuation, the pitch to a company being like, oh, you're Coinbase, you're, you know, some, you just need readers to advertise to. Well, here's your ad platform. I can imagine they'd be like, cool. Like, the same way HubSpot did it with The Hustle, and they've done it with multiple podcasts. It's like, yeah, I can imagine those exits being available. It's just going to take a lot of hard work.
Do you worry about competition? Like, there's so many newsletters now competing, and it seems like every niche.
I probably should, but no. So for me, it's more about... I am a terrible worker and creator when I'm not like highly engaged. So
yeah.
Going back to the building stores, Shopify stores, and then kind of go, just let it fizzle out. Mm-hmm. The decision with Web3 Daily was like, no, just before Web3 Daily was a thing, like just find something that you are like, you love doing. And so Web3 and blockchain intrigues me. I think there's a lot of bullshit in there. Yeah. And we kind of set the stage being like, okay, we're not going to be like, you know, blinded bulls. We're going to be like, that's dumb. Because most of it right now is. But just like with the early internet, yeah, there'll be a few surviving chains and like the technology will go on. But a lot of the early ideas are kind of like, yeah, where was that going? There's like no product market fit just yet because the market doesn't exist at that scale. So I get to write, which I love. I get to be opinionated and objective with, you know, our readers are kind of like, I think if you want completely unbiased crypto news, we're probably not, like, we're not the place to go, but at the same time, we'll make calls that are wrong, and then we'll be like, all right, so we were wrong about this.
Like, reviews, you know, you just want somebody whose opinion is kind of consistent. They don't have to be unbiased, you just have to know where they're coming from so that you can adjust your own expectations based on your understanding of them and their personality and their likes and desires.
Yeah. I think people would sooner say we're dumb rather than we're wrong. You know, they'll be like, oh, okay, you haven't done, you know, I think you're missing, like, this point. But, I like to think we stay consistent because we are very obsessed with the space. It's like, it's really exciting. So it's like, when we do make those misses, it's few and far between, hopefully.
Have you thought about trying to, like, combine with other related newsletters? Like, do some kind of roll-up?
No, not until you just said it. I'm trying to like keep focus of like just make one really good piece of content every day.
Yeah.
Automate the profit center, automate the growth center, which we're getting there now. So all I have to do is make interesting content. Right now it's just based around news.
Yeah.
Once we kind of have our monetization and subscriber growth kind of just, we don't even have to look at it. We check on it once a week, once a month.
Yeah.
Then do experiments where it's like, I can just say to Seb, like, is it cool if I, you know, just don't respond to you for the next week and I'll do...
go work on this.
Yeah, because, I mean, there was one time where... I did this over a few weekends,
mm-hmm.
But I actually had to stop at a certain point. We made a little video game for Web3 Daily. I just followed a tutorial and then, like, did all the graphic design for it and subbed it in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so stupidly simple and, like, you're not going to be like, whoa. You just... Well, our point is, like, we hit it somewhere in our email and on our website. And if people find it, it's just this nice little thing of, like, I don't know why they did this, but this is, like, this is cool. They obviously... They give a shit, because we do. I had to stop, though, because I was like, oh, okay, so now I understand this game engine just a little bit. I wonder what I could do. And I just felt that time suck coming in, being like...
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what if I wrote a story? What if I designed these characters? What if I wonder if I could, like, you know, figure out how to, like, integrate blockchain into this. And then I was just like, okay, this is
it's the so vortex. Easy to get, like, nerd snipe yourself, basically.
Yeah.
You find some interesting problem and you just want to go work on it and it's irrelevant. Like, that's the other thing, too, with newsletters is, yeah, there's, like, a ton of competition, but also everybody in the world has an email address, more or less, everyone that's online. Because you need it to sign up for almost any other service. So you create an email. So the addressable market is everybody in terms of like who reads email, if it's a broad enough email. And that, like, the economics work out so that as long as you make more money from the readers than it costs you to get them, it doesn't really matter what everybody else is doing. You just keep doing that and keep trying to do that more and more.
As far as like, that's the other thing too, is like someone reading another newsletter doesn't mean they're not going to read ours.
Yeah.
Like, we can coexist. So my thinking is, like, as long as... it's like kind of having multiple friends. If someone's just a total bore, okay, yeah, maybe you don't want to hang out with them. You know, if you're exciting and entertaining in a different way to someone else, but you kind of, like, are in the same niche, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have two friends then.
You need to make sure your own content is unmissable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's, doesn't matter if they're subscribed to other newsletters as well.
No, like when you say roll up, I hadn't considered.
For me,
that would
be cool because you'd get a bigger audience, right? Especially, it depends. Like if they're trying to exit their newsletter, you might be able to acquire them at a rate competitive to what you would spend to get the readers through some other means. But you could pay a premium for them because you already know that they're like relevant and you already know what the click rates are and all that. So you could pay a little bit extra. And then if they are still invested in the business, then you could do it as an equity thing instead, where like now you have combined forces, you both own like a smaller share of a bigger pie, but maybe they unlock a new growth channel for you that you didn't have, or now you can combine forces in terms of the writing and the content, and you can now reach like bigger sponsors because you can just like But I found like the CPM that you get for ads, right? So like your price per 1,000 readers or whatever, it doesn't scale linearly though with the number of readers. So like if you double the size of the readers, you don't necessarily double the amount that you make per ad, because there's only so many people at each price point who can afford the ads in the first place. And as you're doing like bigger and bigger media buys, the like CPM seems to come down farther and farther.
Yes. There's this weird... you're the type of person to do it too, like graph it out where there is like this different thing at play. My understanding of it is like we're at 25,000 readers now, so it's like we have a long way to go to really get the data we need, but we noticed that there was this thing of like from the moment we had like 500 subs, I think Seb was like, yeah, I'm just gonna like start asking people, just being like, you know, do you want to advertise with us? And like every now and again, we'd have people say yes, and it was, you know, stupidly cheap. Yeah. And then we got to all right, 10,000 readers, that's impressive, right? We feel like we've worked hard to get there. There was this thing of like, the big guys with huge budgets don't want to touch you because they don't have the time.
Yeah.
Because they have, you know, $1 million to spend on marketing this quarter, and for them to be like, yes, we'll pay $500 for, you know, like, I don't want to spend my time writing.
They don't
want to
do a deal smaller than like $1,000 or $5,000 or like $20,000. They want to do it all at once with a single publication or outlet that has 50,000, 100,000
readers
or more.
And the thing that made it click for me was like, I'm making that marketing manager's job harder because their job is to spend that million. Yeah. If they don't spend that million, the higher ups are going to be like, oh, okay, so we can save on marketing.
They need to spend the money.
So they need to spend it. So you're making it harder by being like, well, how about you buy... you know, if they were to go and target people with 10,000 readers, they'd have to do 10 times the work when they could just go to someone with 100,000 readers. And there is that thing too, at a certain point, where they go, yeah, no, this is all about brand awareness. Yeah. And the CPMs and the click-throughs, you know,
kind of
send us the data, but like at the end of the day, we just need to get this money spent. And I think I can't wait for that moment. Because you see it in like... there'll be like...
Yeah, so that's the value of the roll-up, right? Is it gets you to over that hump where you're no longer competing for like performance-based money. You're instead going at this like brand awareness money.
Oh, it'd
like
be...
a much bigger pie.
With the right fit, it'd be a great decision.
I think this is what sponsorships.com is trying to pull off.
Yeah,
they're acquiring newsletters and they've got these big relationships and they've got a network.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to like put those all together so that somebody... marketing manager can say, hey, here's $1 million, like you go figure it out. This is what Beehive's trying to do with their ad network, the ConvertKit creator network, and like Passion Fruit. Basically anybody that's trying to be a player in the newsletter space is trying to like create this market where they can kind of automate that $1 million ad spend and funnel it down into all these like micro creators who can't manage those relationships directly.
So I think anyone that's in our positions needs to make a decision whether they're like, I mean, you can kind of like, you will straddle the line no matter what you do. But making the decision that we're talking about is like combining. Are you just looking for more eyeballs so that you can then sell that space? Or do you want more eyeballs and greater brand value?
Yeah.
Because that brand value, let's say you become a premium brand in the AI space, and as it grows, other companies are like, how about I don't advertise with you and I just buy you? The multiple that brand value will add to your valuation is massive. But if if you just like, look, I'm just trying to get eyeballs. And then if someone comes and, you know, like sponsorships.com, they're like, well, we just need higher CPMs. It's cool that you have a good brand, but we're not going to give you $100 million for Web3 Daily with 3 million readers. That 3 million is actually going to be, you know, brand gives you that arbitrage to be like, well, you know, like, same way where I'm like, a podcaster tells me to jump and I say hi, how high, because I have this like parasocial relationship. I think that for them, it's probably like personal brand. With newsletters, it's the newsletters brand of like, how much do I trust, trust these people?
Yeah, it seems like there's a few ways to really have a big payday with newsletter audience. It's like you either get massive scale so you can work with big brands directly, or you vertically integrate, right? You create some product that really aligns with the audience, and then you just focus on getting people to sign up for that, or you get bought out.
Ooh, again, that's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, I would love to create products for our audience.
Yeah. There can be a mutually beneficial relationship, too, where if the product itself is just inherently interesting, people will find you via the product directly sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like... that thing of building something within a community is really exciting. The idea of being like, here's this like dog shit wireframe of a product, just tear it to shreds and tell us what you like and what you want to see.
It's
more
a huge
of,
advantage if you have, you know, 20,000 people paying attention to the process of you making a thing. They're much more invested in your success than
you're coming in from like from a like a trust and marketing thing. That's a great angle. For me, I'm kind of like, I just want to hang out with my friends and do hood rat shit. Like the thing that really pulls me is like, yeah, I get to build something with people and they can critique me and like, but I also get to learn how to build a product like that. Yeah.
And this is like, for me, I'm coming from the Indieverse, right? Like Indie Hackers and Indie Worldwide. And a lot of Indie Worldwide's growth came from developing things within the community to try to make the community better and then launching them as like separate little initiatives that got a lot of attention. So like done a bunch of challenges around like user growth or trying to grow a newsletter business or trying to grow a Twitter audience, right? And I've launched each of these as separate brands. And it brings a bunch of new people into the community.
Yeah.
That find out about us because of this thing that we're doing. Like, there's something really powerful about new thing that attracts people.
Yeah. And, like...
You lose out on, like... Like, if you keep doing new things, you have to put in all the effort of new thing every time, which is really hard.
I just wrote an article on... featuring... Contagious... Why We Buy. Why Things Catch On. Doesn't matter. Really good book. My favorite marketing book of all time. They kind of take a look at what we have at our disposal in modern day marketing. Mm-hmm. And they go, which is best? And the interesting thing is the winner was word of mouth, which has been around since humans can talk.
Yeah.
And they dug into that being like, if you have this kind of like insider information, it makes you feel special. So I'll be like, dude, have you heard about Spark Loop? Like, it's crazy. So you like, you advertise on Facebook and then people come to you, they can sign up to other things and you make profit. Like that is word of mouth, but there's value in me being able to share it.
That's kind of like product market fit too. Like being so good, people can't help talking about you.
Yeah. And there's,
I think it's a lot harder to get there with a newsletter because it's so, like, subjective.
I was thinking more about, like, as far as building Indie Worldwide as a community, being like, check this product out, and then the add-on, that little special thing is like, yeah, I actually know the guy. I'm in a Slack channel with him. He runs a single, you know, like...
yeah, I mean, you see it around news stories, too. The coolest thing about Indie Worldwide is all the time, like... almost anything people are talking about, they were like, oh, have you checked out this? And I'm like, yeah, they're in Indie Worldwide, of course.
And it's essentially social proof through word of mouth, being like, you could look at it with the recent submarine tragedy. Every time a new piece of news came out, me and my girlfriend would be like, kind of texting each other to be like, did you hear about this? Mm-hmm. They found debris. And it's this kind of thing of like, oh my God, what? And it's just this competition to like make the other person amazed and be like, oh, awesome, I'm going to go tell my friends at work. And it's this weird thing that exists. And that's how ideas spread, or that's how ideas catch on. Because there's plenty of noise and information that spreads quite easily.
Yeah.
But the stuff that really hooks is, through interpersonal stuff. Have you heard of, is it called dark patterns? Is that?
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
That word.
I remember seeing it and being like, oh yeah, I tried that out years ago. Like,
dark patterns is like, UX patterns that are anti-user. So things like, having to click a little button that says opt out instead of.
Okay. No, wrong then. I think it was dark advertising.
Okay.
I had a buddy that was starting a store and he's a researcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he came to me and he was like, have you tried this, this and this? And I was like, no, this is awesome. What's this? It was dark something. Let's just call it dark advertising. And he's like, okay, so most of high value sharing happens. Mm-hmm. It's online, but it's not trackable. So it'll be like, if I send you a text message being like, have you checked out this product?
Yeah.
Because there's obviously trust because we have each other's numbers. We're texting each other about products. There's obviously a relationship there and some trust. So if I say this is a good product, you're going to trust it a whole lot. So how do you track those relationships? How do I, as a business, if you get sent a link over iMessage,
mm-hmm.
how do I retarget you? So what they started doing was they'd put this HTML, I don't know what it was coded in. You put some code into your Shopify theme,
mm-hmm.
and it would, like, let's say you went to anthony.com, and that's your landing page. It would always add a unique identifying code onto that session of every URL. So for every session that was created, the URL had a unique identifier that would travel across iMessage, across email, across everything. And then you'd just let it run for 6 months, and then until you had a web of, I think, 30,000 connections. It was nuts. The amount of
did this time out or did it die? Maybe it got too hot. There we go.
Yeah, there was this wealth of information. It was kind of creepy that it was something that was allowed to. I mean, I'm sure people still do it.
Quick pause while I check if I'm not late to my next thing already, because we've been jamming.
Oh shit, we have been.
Yeah, I gotta get to Manhattan, so. To recap, Chevy Cass.
Yeah.
Web3 Daily. 25,000 readers. Trying to get to 3 million. Sell it for 100 million to Coinbase specifically.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Mostly grown through Facebook ads.
Yeah.
Seems to still be working, especially using Spark Loop to kind of create a flywheel effect.
Yeah.
Trying to automate your growth, really automate your sales, get more people to buy ads so that you can build a small team and then free up more of your energy for everything else that you want to do.
Yeah. You should put most of your energy into automating sales because that's the harder one. You should be able to find everything you need to automate subscriber growth online through Facebook and Instagram ads, maybe some Google ads, get Upscribe. If you're using Beehive, use their version of Upscribe on top of Spark Loop's Upscribe.
Yeah.
You're golden.
I think sponsorships are hard. This is why I decided to put more effort again into like meeting up with as many startup founders as I can, because like those relationships lead to sponsorships either directly or indirectly, but it's usually a pretty clear correlation between how many people do I talk to that like run businesses and are trying to grow them, and how many people buy ads and like join my community.
Yeah.
And so just like going hard on that. Really interested to see how sponsorships.com works out, and sales.co, if they can help move inventory, that'd be great. Because that's kind of the missing piece, I would say.
Anyone that can offer to solve it to, and then non-exclusive, meaning they're cool if, you know, other people are reaching out on your behalf, do it.
There you go. Yeah. So if you're trying to start a sales business, just target newsletter owners and like, yeah. I feel like there's a lot of room to compete still.
Yeah, I've discovered those two through you in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. And I've been tearing my hair out being like, why isn't there a solution? Like a turnkey, just, someone we have the space, you just sell it and take 30%. Yeah, finally someone did it.
Makes sense. All right, dude, thank you. Bye.